So we are now going to be looking at the second chapter of Ruth. Probably one of the most phenomenal pieces of ancient literature as far as the uniqueness and the way in which the story is told. Absolutely fascinating, I think, in a variety of different ways. And I think we see a little bit more of this even this morning. We know now that Ruth and Naomi have returned to the land of Judah. They've been brought back from exile in the land of Moab. The Lord has visited His people. He has drawn near to them and He's taken action. He's provided a solution to the problem of the famine that initially drove Naomi and her family out of the land of Judah. And now they've been brought back, and we know that that transition there in verse 22 at the end of chapter 1 kind of serves to show how they have returned, and they've returned at the most opportune time, right at the beginning of the barley harvest. So they've come now to Bethlehem, the house of bread, at the beginning of the barley harvest, because there is now food. God has brought bread for His people. But we know that their journey back to Bethlehem, Naomi did not seem to have very high prospects. She was not very confident of what was going to take place there. In fact, she tried very hard to convince her two daughters-in-law not to come with her, to actually go back to the land of Moab, to go back to their mother's family with the hopes that they would find a husband there, that they would be better protected there, that they would experience God's steadfast love, His covenantal love, there in exile instead of back in the land of Judah. So Naomi comes back. She is bitter now. She would prefer to be called bitter. And she is empty. She said to them, "Do not call me Naomi, call me Mara," meaning bitter, "for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty." So she is not a very confident woman. She is not confident of what she's going to experience there, but she goes back nonetheless. And I think what happens in chapter 2 takes her by surprise. Even though she's not really a primary actor in chapter 2, chapter 2 has more to do with Ruth and a fellow by the name of Boaz. This is similar to chapter 1 in that we do see a lot of dialogue between the characters. You could kind of divide it up in a similar way and say that there's five speeches, just like we saw in chapter 1, four speeches by Naomi and one by Ruth. Well, now we have different speeches, two between Ruth and Naomi at the beginning and at the end of the chapter. Then we have basically two between Boaz and Ruth, and then one between Boaz and his servants. So that's kind of how we could see a little bit of the structure. It is going to be important as we recognize that structure, that there's a similar structure happening again in chapter 3. So you have these beginning and ending discussions between Naomi and Ruth, and then you have this long discussion between Ruth and Boaz. So chapter 2 is about gleaning in the fields. And we'll look at a little bit of this practice in ancient Israel and ancient times. But it kind of revolves around this story of gleaning and the provision that God provides for Ruth through the hands of Boaz. The word glean here is used about 12 times in chapter 2, and it's not used any other place in the book. So this is about Ruth gleaning, doing what she can to provide food for her new house. So let's go ahead and read through this, and we're going to walk through it together then. So chapter 2, verse 1. Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabite, said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him, in whose sight I shall find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his young man who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, "She is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers.' So she came, and she has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest." Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn." And then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" But Boaz answered her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." And then she said, "I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants." And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine." So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed to her roasted grain. And she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. And when she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. And also pull out some from the bundles for her, and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her." So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. And she took it up and went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned, and she also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, "Where did you glean today, and where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The man's name with whom I worked today is Boaz." And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." And Naomi also said to her, "The man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers." And Ruth, the Moabite, said, "Besides, he said to me, 'You shall keep close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest.'" And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women, lest in another field you be assaulted." So she kept close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and wheat harvests. And she lived with her mother-in-law. So that's chapter 2. We have actually a lot going on here. Let me try to unpack some of this for you. I think that primarily what we need to see here is we need to see this overabundance, this generous kindness that Boaz displays to Ruth. I think that's demonstrated in a number of ways. But behind that even, we do see something else. We see, even though the narrator doesn't really describe it this way for us, but we see the Lord's activity. We see Yahweh at work in a maybe hidden way, in a disguised way that I think the narrator wants to keep hidden. He doesn't really come right out and say it, and yet he kind of comes right out and says it. I think this is demonstrated in a number of ways too. You notice how there's this desire to bless, this desire to bless Boaz, both from the lips of Naomi and from the lips of the young women whom Boaz greets. And there's this also desire to show favor or to find favor. which we see Ruth receiving from Boaz specifically. But all of that is actually a clear demonstration that God is actually doing things that Naomi didn't think were going to happen, and that he's doing so through the words and the deeds of the characters in the story. So let's kind of unpack it now and see how this actually comes out. So verse 1 is really just kind of like a clue, an indicator that we're going to be introduced to another character. Now this is just what the narrator provides. You could read chapter 1, skip over chapter 2, and go right to chapter 2, verse 2, without chapter 2, verse 1 actually having any significance. So the narrator introduces to us a man, Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech, of Naomi's deceased husband, and that this man was a worthy man. So Boaz actually, if you look forward to Solomon's temple, there's a pillar out front of Solomon's temple that's named after him. So he has this sort of strong reputation. He is a worthy man, meaning that he is an honorable man, a distinguished and probably wealthy man. It's a word that's also used to describe warriors. So he is a strong, honorable, distinguished man in the community. And we could see how his servants respect him in that way. We could see how he seems to be fairly wealthy, fairly well-to-do, in that he provides for both his young women and his young men, his servants, and in the way that he responds specifically to Ruth. Now, Ruth is not aware that Boaz exists. It's important for us to understand. And we don't even, maybe Naomi doesn't even know that Boaz exists. Remember her hurt and her despair and perhaps her pessimism when she was in the land of Moab, thinking about going back to the land of Judah, not thinking that it's going to go well whatsoever. I don't know if she didn't think that there was, she assumed that there was no prospects for her, that there would be no one for her to marry, to redeem her, to take over the lineage of Elimelech. So there was perhaps no thought that Boaz would be the one who could fulfill that responsibility. But by the end of this chapter 2, we realize that she remembers who Boaz is and that he's a part of the family. But Ruth is unaware that Boaz exists. And she is determined just to go out and provide for this woman and herself that she's just pledged her loyalty to. She's committed herself to Naomi. Naomi has nothing, even not even recognizing that Ruth is with her. And yet Ruth is going to take steps to actually provide for this family. So just because there's bread in Bethlehem doesn't mean that your pantry is going to be full. That doesn't mean that you're going to have enough food to actually survive. You actually have to go out and gather it for yourself. And you have to thresh it, or you have to sift it. You have to do what you can to provide for yourself. And there's actually this caveat in the law, this requirement in the law that allows you to do this, this practice of gleaning. Now, why Ruth goes out and Naomi doesn't, I have no idea. It's possibly because Naomi is still not in a very good state. But Ruth is going to take the initiative. She's going to act upon the understanding of gleaning in the ancient times, perhaps even being aware of the requirement in the law to allow this to take place. So she goes out, and she goes out in hope that she's going to find a favorable landowner. Right, she's not going out because she knows that Boaz is wealthy and that he's a nice guy and that he will allow her to glean in her fields. She's going to go out with the hope and the expectation that she's going to find somebody that is favorable to her and will allow her to glean in his field. So that is her desire in verse 2. Something that demonstrates her complete and utter dependence upon someone's kindness. Okay, we understand here that I think there is at least two or three verses in chapter 2 that kind of hint at the idea that this may not be the safest place for a young woman to find herself. And it may not even be a safe place for a young Moabite woman to find herself. She is in a foreign land, completely dependent upon someone's kindness. And she is a part of a people that Israel has hated for years, a people that did not bless the Israelites when they came out of Egypt. And she is a woman as well, and we know that Moabite women do not have the greatest reputation. From the very origins of the people to the women in the land that seduced and then led the people of Israel into idolatry. So she is in a very vulnerable position as she goes out and seeking someone's kindness. She's willing to do the work. She just has to be able to find someone who will let her work in his land. So she goes out. She goes out with the blessing of Naomi. Go, my daughter. And she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. So verse 3. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. Now, verse 3 kind of sets up the rest of the story. And it's actually fascinating to see this coincidence, this kind of random chance occurrence here. There was lots of other fields that she could choose from. There was lots of other places for her to glean. And yet, she just so happens to go to the part of the field that belongs to Boaz, whom, again, she doesn't know, but the narrator has already introduced for us, Boaz, who happens to be of the clan of Elimelech. Now, ESV does not really uncover this that much for us in verse 3. She happened to come to the part of the field. Now, that could kind of allude to the chance occurrence that's taking place here. But I want to read for you a couple other examples from different translations that actually uncover this a little bit better. So literally, the Hebrew says this, that her chanced upon. So there's kind of this double usage of a similar word that hints at the randomness of this event. Now the LSB, which is basically like the New American Standard Bible, but just with a different stamp on it, says this. It so happened that she happened to come to the portion of the field belonging to Boaz. So do you see the repetitive nature of that, the redundancy? Okay. So this is a clear mark by the narrator that when you say something like that, that you're actually hinting at something that is different than what is actually being said. Now, is this just a random coincidence in the narrator's mind that she just happened to happen upon the land that belonged to Boaz? Well, of course not, right? Because he is showing us that God is the one who is kind of orchestrating these events. He's working through the initiative of Ruth, the fact that Ruth has followed Naomi back into the land and now is taking efforts to provide for her family. He's working through those events to accomplish his purposes, to bring her into contact with this kinsman redeemer, this worthy man who was of the family, the clan of Elimelech. So there are really no coincidences. This isn't just random chance, just atoms kind of crashing into each other and bouncing away and kind of being a fortuitous sign. This is nothing like that whatsoever. It's not luck. It's not fortune. It's an example of God's kindness. She just happens to show up at the right spot, at the right time, and she's going to encounter the right guy. I know none of you women have a story like that. No, I mean, you think about the reason why you're here this morning is because of certain things that have happened to bring you here. Certain things that maybe, I don't think any of you were thinking, I'm going to go to Elk and I'm going to find a community church and I'm going to be a part of it and it's going to be awesome. I know I wasn't thinking that when I moved to Elk. In fact, I was deliberately trying to avoid the community church in Elk. And yet, things happened, you know. Decisions were made and plans were made and efforts were taken, and this is where we find ourselves. So if you read in all of the ways in which God is being shown and being demonstrating his purposes and his providence in chapter 1, we carry that with us into chapter 2. Naomi kind of, in one way, blames God for everything bad that's happened to her. But we know that God's hand is behind the famine, as God's hand is behind the death of Elimelech and Mahlon and Chilion. God's hand is behind visiting his people again with food. And God's hand is behind Ruth and her pledge of loyalty to Naomi. And God's hand is behind them coming back to the land of Judah. Even though Naomi doesn't think this is going to end well, she's still back there. And she just so happened to have Ruth with her. And now Ruth just so happens to land in the field of Boaz. And while she's there, Boaz just happens to show up. Right? That's what verse 4 tells us. So she's there. Boaz comes from Bethlehem. Right? And behold, meaning, look, notice this. Boaz came from Bethlehem. And Boaz comes, and he comes with this greeting to the reapers. Yahweh be with you. And they answered, Yahweh bless you. Now, this has become such a part of some traditions that they actually incorporate this into their greetings, both in the Eastern and Western Church, because it's such a significant greeting and such a significant blessing, such a significant request. And this gives you actually an idea of the type of man that Boaz was, and it gives you an idea of the type of community that's being formed in his very land with his employees, if you will call them that, his reapers. So he comes and he greets. The first thing he says to his employees is, the Lord be with you, Yahweh be with you, which is the promise of the covenant, that God would be with his people, that he would walk among them, that they would be his people and he would be their God. So he's conveying this covenantal blessing to them, knowing that this is going to be the best for his people, his employees. And they respond in kind, right, to this honorable, worthy leader, landowner, distinguished man in the community. May the Lord bless you. Would you think about this request? How is it that the Lord is going to bless Boaz? Now you notice at the end of the chapter, Naomi actually expresses two requests for blessing. May he be blessed by the Lord. In verse 20. And then verse 18. Oh, sorry, verse 19. Blessed be the man who took notice of you. So there's this desire now for this man, this worthy man, to be blessed. And it's interesting to see how this request is actually fulfilled. I think the request is actually fulfilled in Ruth, the very one that he blesses. But we'll have more about that. We'll say more about that, I think, next week. So this is not a greeting that you would necessarily hear on our job sites today. This is not what you would necessarily hear from your boss, who's perhaps stressed out and worried and demanding more of his workers. And this is probably not a response that you would hear from workers, especially not out in the farm fields and the construction sites. But yet, because of the situation taking place in Israel, in Bethlehem, even during the dark time of the judges, you see this covenantal community that's formed around this, that God is a part of his community and that his people desire to be blessed. So, Boaz then immediately takes notice of Ruth. Boaz said to his young man who was in charge of the reapers, whose young woman is this? And the servant here, the unnamed servant, seems to have a lot to say about Ruth. Now, she's the Moabite woman who came back from Moab. who came with Naomi, who requested the glean in this field, and she's worked really hard. She's worked this whole morning, and she's only taken a short break. Right? So this servant recognizes the qualities, the characteristics of Ruth. She's a hardworking, polite, respectful woman. And by the way, she's from Moab. She's the Moabite woman. Again, that would probably raise flags and wonder, okay, is this going to be perceived positively, negatively? He seems to commend her for her hard work and the effort that she's taken. Well, the end of verse 5 is a little weird. End of verse 7 is a little weird. People take a different understanding of that. Did she come and did she work hard? And she only took a short rest, probably taking rest under some sort of temporary shelter, you know, out of the heat of the sun. Or did she come and she make this request and then she just waited until Boaz showed up to answer it? Now, I think I'm of the opinion that she was working hard the whole entire time. Boaz shows up and the guy tells her that she's worked hard this whole time and only taken a short rest. Now, why is that the case? Well, because of the amount of food that she's able to gather by the end of the day, it seems like she would be, even as large amount that is, it seems like she would have to be working the whole entire time. It's not like she could just start after lunch and gather in, what is it, an ephah of barley. So this young man commends Ruth, the Moabite, to Boaz. Now Boaz now has the opportunity to respond. We've seen a little bit of his character, a little bit of what he's like, and now it's up to him to respond to Ruth. And he seems to be eager to do so. Now listen, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn. Now think about that for just a moment. A Moabite woman, vulnerable, destitute, needy, and he responds to her in this type of way. Boaz said to Ruth, "Listen, have you not heard, my daughter?" Again, an endearing term. Not just probably hinting at the age difference between these two, but an affectionate term of endearment. And look at what he does to provide for her. He's giving her permission to glean in his field and basically telling her not to go to another man's field. He wants her here. Follow the young women. I've given instructions to the young men not to harm you, not to touch you, not to taunt you. And I'll provide for you water. You drink as much as you want. So she has this provision now, which is far beyond what the law actually required of Boaz. If you go back and you read a couple of examples, I'll share with you. You go back and you read those examples, it just is our general instructions on leaving or not harvesting all of the edges of your field and not harvesting all of the fruit in the vine. You just leave a little bit there. And then the gleaners can come and they can pick up the rest. So it's this provision in the law, and it's based on the idea that if God's people were going to be obedient in the land, then God would bless them, that he would cause their crops to be fruitful, that it would be abundance, there would be plenty for everyone. So when you harvest your fields or you harvest your vines or your olive trees, whatever it might be, you can leave a little bit on there because you're going to have enough for yourself and you're going to have so much stored up in your pantry that you're not going to have to harvest every single little bit. You don't have to be 100% efficient. You can let that 10 or 15% go because you're going to have more than you need. And there's going to be other people who are in a situation that actually shows that they need food and you should leave a little bit for them. So for instance, in Deuteronomy 24, When you reap your harvest in your field and forget a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow. That the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. When you beat your olive trees, you shall not go over them again. It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not strip it afterward. It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Therefore, I command you to do this. So, do you understand the principle behind this? You're actually caring for the sojourner, the stranger, the foreigner. You're caring for the fatherless, those who do not have a parent to provide for them. And you're caring for the widow, both of which would be the category that Ruth and Naomi fall into. So here they are. Instead of just leaving a little bit for them, letting them come, Boaz kind of goes and takes another step. He goes above and beyond. He provides protection for Naomi. He provides permission for her to glean in his fields. He provides water for her, which is nowhere required in the law whatsoever. And she recognizes now that this man has actually shown her the favor that she sought back in verse 2. This is the kindness that she was looking for. And this guy, he's shown her so much kindness, so much care, so much provision that she's just astounded. She falls on her face, bowing to the ground, saying to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner? I'm a Moabite. Why have you shown me such kindness? Why have I found such favor in your eyes?" That's pretty astounding. She does not just come to the field thinking that, hey, the law requires that you leave some food for me to glean. The law demands that you provide for my needs. So she's not just this ungrateful woman here. She's not just a bitter, ungrateful woman demanding that other people provide for her needs. Very different than what we see in our culture today. She's grateful for everything that she's received, for being able to see this kindness that's come through the hand of Boaz. Knowing that she is just a stranger in a strange land, and that she's done nothing to deserve the kindness that Boaz displays to her and gives to her. So she's astounded when she receives it. It literally flattens her. And she bows to the ground at his feet. But Boaz's response, I think, in 11 through 12, actually demonstrate a little bit more about Ruth. She has a reputation. She's not just a young, attractive girl from Moab. No, he's not going to use that excuse that, hey, you know, perhaps if you're single and, you know, I'm single, maybe, you know, we can see each other a little bit more. No, there's nothing like that going on. Boaz hints at her reputation. That the loyalty that Ruth displayed, the Naomi, the commitments that she displayed, the kindness that she displayed in pledging herself to her mother-in-law, has been made known to him. All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. A full reward be given to you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. So does Boaz see her as a Moabite woman? No. No, she's an Israelite. You've displayed this kindness to Naomi, and I've heard all about it. And you've even come now with her back to this land. You are now a foreigner, a stranger in this land. And you now have been incorporated into this people, the people of Israel. You're no longer a Moabite. You've come to Yahweh. You've come to our God. And you've sought out refuge under His wings, under the corner of His garments. So Ruth has gone all the way from being a stranger, part of a group of people who were hostile and enemies to Israel, who worship other gods, and now she's pledged herself to an Israelite and followed her to a different land and sought refuge under the God of Israel. So why has Boaz shown her this favor? Well, that's exactly why. Now remember, too, remember Boaz's mother. Who was Boaz's mother? Rahab. Yeah. His mom was a Canaanite. And his sister was a Hittite. And his brother was a Perizzite. No, I just made that up. No, but that actually is not mentioned in the book of Ruth. You don't know that until you go back and you read the genealogy in Matthew. But Rahab was also one of these types of women, incorporated into the people of God, sought refuge under the shadow of the wings of God, who joined a foreign people. So there's no doubt that would have impacted Boaz in his response, even though culturally this probably would not have been accepted. And that's why so much in the prophets you see that these are the people who are taken advantage of. These are the people that the Lord, through His prophets, indicts His people for. The marginalized, the sojourners, the widows, the fatherless. And yet, here's a classic example of this taking place. The love that was supposed to be demonstrated, even going beyond what the law required, the love being demonstrated to your neighbor. So again, in verse 13, Ruth says, "I found favor in your eyes. You have comforted me. You spoke kindly to your servant. You've spoken kindly to my heart, though I am not one of your servants. I'm not worthy to be a part of your people, to be called one of your servants, to be under your employ. And yet, that is where I find myself." It's as if she's now a part of Boaz's family. She's a part of his household. She can glean in his fields. She can follow his young women. His young men are to protect her. She's been fully brought in, grafted into the tree of Israel. So we could go on here and see other examples, I think, of the generosity that Boaz shows to her. In 14 through 16, he actually invites her to his table. So here is a Gentile eating, having table fellowship with a Jew, providing with her for bread and wine, providing her with roasted grain to eat enough that she is able to eat to be satisfied and still have leftovers that she would then bring back to Naomi at the end of the day. And he provides further instructions for her, going out to tell her to glean, telling his young men to not reproach her, not to taunt her, to treat her well and respectfully, and even to pull out some stalks from the bundles that would be bound up and tied together. So as you go out, young man, the men would normally be the ones who would probably handle the scythe, and they would cut the barley down, the women would come behind, and they would kind of bundle it up and tie it together. Well, now the men are told to actually pull some of those stalks out of the bundle so that Ruth can grab them on her way as she gleans the field. So again, going above and beyond what the law required. This is the generosity of Boaz demonstrated through his kindness in providing for Ruth. And she actually gathers a massive amount of food. She works until evening. She beats out what she has gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. An ephah, I mean, there's that one page in the back of your Bible that shows you like units of measurement and tables like that. No one really knows exactly how big these things were. But an ephah was like a tenth of a homer, which would be like the size of an omer, which would be, yeah, we don't really know. So most likely for some reason, the measurement is provided in liters, which I don't understand necessarily. But the measurement would be anywhere from 22 to 36 liters, at least that's what I've read, which means that this is about 30 pounds of barley. A massive amount of barley to harvest in one day. One day, I mean probably 12 hours roughly, with a few breaks in there, she's able to collect, you know, not in nice tidy bundles, but to collect from the fields all the different stalks of barley, and then to thresh it out, beat it out so that the seeds fall out, and gather the seeds, and there's this massive amount of barley left over. Enough barley to last her and Naomi for probably a couple weeks. People say that a working man would eat about a pound of barley a day. So this amount of food, 30 pounds, would last two women at least 2 weeks. And that's why Naomi is so surprised at how much food she gathered. She comes back with this bag full, you know, on her head or, you know, over her shoulder, a barley seed. And she just kind of flounders in this great expression of how much favor she's seen. Where did you glean today? Where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took care of you, who took notice of you. So Naomi, even though she doesn't go out and work, even though she may have been worried about Ruth, well, you know, why hasn't she come back yet? She recognized that someone has favored Ruth. Someone has shown her kindness. And she has this massive amount to show for it. So Ruth spills the beans. Where have you worked? Oh, what just happened upon this field that I happened into, and this guy actually came up. His name was Boaz. And Naomi said, may he be blessed by Yahweh, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead. Now this is kind of a pivotal moment, I think, for Naomi's sake, but also for the theme of the book. Yahweh bless this man, whose kindness, whose covenantal love, whose chesed, whose faithful, loyal love, has not forsaken the living or the dead. It continues. Now the very thing that Naomi seemed to struggle with in verse 1 is that I've been forsaken. I am desolate, I'm empty, and I'm bitter. And yet she recognizes now, when she hears the name of Boaz, she recognizes that God's covenantal love continues. Has not abandoned her. Has not forsaken her. Has not forsaken the living, mainly Ruth and herself, or the dead, Elimelech, and Mahlon, and Chilion. So she's beginning to see, I think, this glimmer of hope arises in her heart when she hears the name of Boaz, and she remembers that he's a clansman. And she's beginning to see that perhaps there's still hope for us. We have food now. We have a man who's shown favor. Perhaps there's still something left over for my husband's family. My dead children's family. Maybe there's a possibility that their name, their inheritance, their land can continue. And we say maybe because we don't yet know exactly how that comes to pass. So again, at the end, Ruth explains to Naomi the generosity of Boaz. You know, not only can you gather barley in my field today and have my protection, my provision, my permission, you can do so throughout the rest of the harvest. So this demonstrates that she has now been fully brought into his household. Fully brought in, but yet, at the end of verse 23, she's still living with her mother-in-law. So not fully brought in. But yet she has permission to glean his fields through the end of the harvest, which would be maybe 6 or 8 weeks, the beginning of the barley harvest to the beginning and end of the wheat harvest. So I think what we see here is this great declaration then at the end of 20. Naomi said to her, the man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers. Now, this is the first mention of that in the book, but it's going to be pivotal as we understand the role that Boaz is going to have, the role of a redeemer. This man can save us. So she's going to, that's basically what she's saying. Save us in the sense that he's providing for us now, but also save us in the sense that he can redeem my deceased husband and my deceased children. Now, what would that look like? Just shortly here, two things. It would look like, well, it looks like in a variety of different contexts, it looks like someone who takes revenge for your murder. So an avenger of blood is a redeemer. So if you happen to find yourself murdered, then one of your close kinsmen, your close relative, could come up and he could avenge you by actually killing the person that killed you. Justly, that was proven to be the case. All those different things play a part in that. But that would be one role of the redeemer. A redeemer would also be someone who would buy you back from slavery. So if you happen to go into slavery based upon a debt that you owed or money that you owed that you could not pay, you can give yourself to be a slave, and the redeemer could then buy you back. But the example we'll see here is the case of a man who dies and whose children die and has no one to pass his land, his inheritance off to. So the redeemer could come and he could step into that role and he can provide offspring through the practice of levirate marriage, and he could purchase that land and he could keep that land within the family. So that's the cliffhanger that I think the note, the chapter kind of ends on. Is Boaz that type of redeemer? Is he the one that's actually going to step in and fulfill that role? So as we anticipate that, let us just think about a couple different things here. Of course, what we should see is this excessive generosity, this excessive kindness of Boaz. How he goes way beyond what the law actually required to provide more for Ruth. A foreigner, a Moabite, a woman with no family and no husband. And he takes the effort to provide for her. Shows her that kindness, gives her everything that she needs in order for her to thrive. That's just one example, though. I think behind this, we should actually see the kindness of God. God demonstrates his chesed, his covenantal love, his loyalty to his people through organizing and orchestrating these strange circumstantial events. Just people going out to work and then somehow crossing the path to the very ones that can provide for them, that can give them what they need in the short term, but also provide them with something in the long term. So it's not as if we're just approaching life from a very, what would be a good word? We become fascinated with seeking out God's providential hand, looking for it in every corner, and just trying to wonder about how God is going to work. We just go about our daily business. We just do what it is that we know we're supposed to do. Ruth just goes to provide for her family. She just goes to work. And yet, this is what's brought about. She doesn't pray beforehand. She doesn't fast beforehand. She doesn't question every decision that she's made. She just knows that this is the next best thing for me to do, and I need to do it. I'm going to go out and I'm going to do it. And then she happens to find herself in that position. She happened to find herself in Boaz's field, and he happened to show up at the right time. We understand God's providence to be working out all the time in so many situations and circumstances that we don't fully understand. It's really only in retrospect that we can see his sovereign hand accomplishing his purposes. But the manner in which he displays his loving kindness is through people, right? The Lord be with you. The Lord bless you. How is that actually manifesting? I mean, it sounds really spiritual. It's something that we would want. Of course, we want the Lord to be with us. We don't want to be forsaken. We don't want to be abandoned. We don't want him to leave. And yet, how does that actually affect our lives? Well, in one way, it's affected our lives through the people that he brings into it. I think often God manifests his presence in our lives by our relationships and in our friendships and in what God is doing in them. How is he working in those relationships to bring us along? How is he showing us kindness through the words that people say or the encouragement that we receive or the rebuke that we need to hear? God is constantly doing that, constantly caring for his people by using his people. I think here we should also see that we, like Naomi and Ruth, we need a redeemer. Our position is not that much different than their own. We come empty and need to be filled. We come vulnerable and we need protection. We come dead and we need to be made alive. We need someone who is going to care for us. Someone to do for us what we can't do for ourselves. Now, how is that going to come about? Well, it just so happens, it happens to happen, that Yahweh has provided precisely what we need. He has sent his son, a greater Boaz, to shower us with his steadfast love, to show mercy that we don't deserve, kindness and faithfulness. He welcomes us to his table. Strangers and aliens and sojourners that we are, he brings us in. He forgives our debts, and he establishes us as members in his household. So this is what our Redeemer has done. And he invites us to his table to feast. He gives us bread and he gives us wine. He provides a meal for us, and he's not afraid to eat with Gentiles like us. He's not afraid to eat with the sinners that have despised his name and turned from him. Like Boaz, he gives us what we need, and he gives us so much more. Let's pray.